Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, July 12th. I'm Ray Graff. No matter how big or how small, a home improvement project can be a major undertaking. As luck would have it, we have a licensed professional engineer and construction specialist with us. It's Darren Tracy, and he is in the studio to answer your questions about home repair and maintenance. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is the number. Or you may email us, voxpop@wamc.org, and we will certainly try to get to as many emails as possible. Darren Tracy is here, 800-348-2551. We talk home repair and maintenance coming up on Vox Pop after the news. Hi, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. We welcome back Darren Tracy. He is a licensed professional engineer with extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management. Darren is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, which specializes in unique projects, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. To join our discussion today, all you have to do is give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here today. Big doings at the New York State Society of Professional Engineers, huh?
Our Capital District chapter recently awarded scholarships to four area high school seniors who plan to attend a college and major in engineering.
Oh, cool.
And all told, the scholarships totaled $6,000, and that's quite a bit of money for our small organization to accumulate and give out to worthy seniors. And they're from three different school districts of the area: Saratoga Springs, South Colony, and Chatham School District.
Oh, that's terrific.
And a lot of people involved with our organization, and we have golf tournaments, and that's a major source of our fundraising. A lot of donors, sponsors, and I'd just like to thank everybody that contributed, and kind of a hats off to all volunteers and all organizations, because it takes a lot of work to be a volunteer.
How do you decide which children get the – have you ever seen that Seinfeld episode?
No.
Where George Costanza is on a – he tries to get a kid who wants to be an architect, but he's just a scam artist.
Yeah.
How do you vet the children?
There's a panel. Two guys are on the panel, and it's a weighted system, as you might expect, being an engineering organization, and we're very analytical on that. So many points allotted to community service, so many points allotted to grades, mm-hmm. so many points allotted to organizations, those types of factors, and you total them up, and the numbers tell the tale. I mean, really, there's some really talented and giving young citizens out there. And interestingly enough, all four of the awards go to females. And STEM, science, technology,
that's
engineering,
terrific.
And math is historically not a popular major for females, but it's really nice to see, and there's no reason it can't be.
The times, they are a-changing.
Right.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest, and before we get to the phones, you wanted to have a word or two about safety.
Right. Almost a public service to remind people to be safe when they're out making home improvements around their home. It's, as I said to you before the show, it's all fun and games until somebody gets hurt.
Yep.
And then it's not so much fun.
Absolutely.
Just a couple of the basic things. Slip hazards. I'm thinking of a porch in my front porch.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a nice varnish sheen on top of that. It's a spar urethane varnish, and it's held up well for about 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have recoated it, but it looks great. But in the winter, you get just a dusting of snow on that, and the coefficient of friction just goes away. And it's like, that's engineering lingo for it's as slippery as an eel. I mean, you just go. So, you know, that's something to take into consideration. Maybe put a carpet down or put some sand mix in your finish. Another item that I want to mention was GFCIs. Do I have a moment to mention
this? Sure, that's ground
fault circuit interrupters. I saw in the news this week where a girl, young adult, was electrocuted. I think she was in a bathtub, and she had her cell phone in her hand. She was charging it. I'm not sure exactly how it happened, but if that circuit had ground fault circuit interrupter protection, that would accident wouldn't have happened. So, you know, anytime you're around water, be it a kitchen sink area or a bathroom, the electric circuit should be protected.
Mm-hmm.
And it senses the difference between the hot and the neutral, the amount of current that's going from the hot and the neutral. And when they're not equivalent, it trips off. That's how that works.
And I assume the modern building codes require that.
That's correct. That's correct. But, you know, if you have an existing home, the code does not require an existing home to be brought up to a current building code, but it's a good idea in those wet areas. And lastly, just fall protection. One of the greatest hazards is being up on a ladder or a stool.
Sure, standing on a chair. Yeah, oh, I've done that.
When you're about to do something and this thought runs through your head, this might not be a good idea to do this, don't do it.
You make a good point. Darren Tracy is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. Let's go over to Cynthia in Olive Bridge. Cynthia, you're on.
Hi, I'm so glad you guys are on. My shower, when I get in it, it's only started doing this for the last year or so, I turn it on and it whistles. And then it'll stop and it'll whistle again. And also, sometimes the water pulses. So I'm hoping you can tell me what to do.
Okay. Hi, Cynthia. Whistles, that indicates to me that the velocity has increased for some reason. Like when you're whistling with your mouth, you pucker your lips, you make the holes smaller, an increased velocity will make a sound. So that's probably what's happening, and I would suggest cleaning the shower head, removing the shower head. There may be mineral deposits. There are products out there, for instance, CLR or the Works, that will dissolve minerals and make those openings larger. So that's the first thing I would try.
It did do that even when I put in a new shower head.
Mm. Okay, well, you may have some mineral deposits someplace upstream from there. Again, as you say that, I'm thinking of some of the other suggestions I've had in the past. Like hit it with a hammer. It's like
that old method.
And, you know, I'm serious about that. If you can access the pipes in the back of your shower, tap the pipes with a hammer.
Not too hard.
Not too hard. Tap the pipes with a hammer.
Right.
And, you know, that's my old tool bag trick. Get the hammer out. And that may loosen some of the mineral deposits in the piping and solve your problem. Otherwise, you may have to replace some of the valving for your shower.
But that's a good, inexpensive way to get started. Right. Cynthia, thank you very much. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Darren Tracy is our guest. Evan in Port Jervis. Evan, you're on.
Hi. I have a two-story house, and house was built in the 1870s, and I have a problem with one of the rooms in which the plaster, which had some previous damage from years ago and was repaired, seems to be crumbling and falling down for about half the room. And I'm wondering if it's possible to repair the plaster as opposed to ripping it all down and doing a gypsum board.
You can repair plaster. I have not done that personally. I know that it's a specialty, and so I can't help you on that other than to say that I have patched in plaster walls with gypsum sheetrock, and it looks very similar. So, you know, if it's not a historic restoration and you're not overly overly picky, you can probably make the repair relatively easily with sheetrock or gypsum board.
Okay.
All right, Evan, thank you very much for the call. We go over to Lee in Oneonta. Hi, Lee.
Hi, how are you?
Good, you're on.
Okay, so the situation is this. My son is looking at a house that was built in the 1800s, and apparently what happened is in the attic crawl space, they ended up putting down cellulose insulation. and nothing was ever left as far as for soffit vents. So what happened when the home inspector came, they found mold on the roof rafters. So they ended up getting somebody in who said that all they would have to do is put in a gable end fan to take care of the mold. So my question is, would that actually work, or they really need to get soffit vents put in and really think about the situation that since there's mold on the roof rafters, that it's more than what meets the eye?
The gable vents may be adequate enough. Typically, you need, I think it's 1 square foot of ventilation area for every, it's either 300 square feet or 150 square feet. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Right.
It's probably every 300 square feet, and I'm thinking 150 square feet for the soffit and 150 on the ridge vent. Anyways, that would help. You could also install a ridge vent on your shingles. What type of roof material do you have? Do you have asphalt?
Okay, apparently the house has was a metal roof.
Okay.
And there is a ridge vent supposedly with a metal roof, but I believe it was putting over the old sheathing. So how much ventilation is actually getting into the roof? I don't know because I haven't seen the house. This is what he's telling me.
Well, it would be relatively simple to remove the cap on top of that metal roof, and then you can cut an opening in the ridge. I like a ridge vent because it's more laminar. You get better flow throughout the whole roof area.
Right.
Okay. Well, Lee, we have to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. More calls on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from the New York Military Academy, Cornwall, a co-ed boarding school that strives to offer a safe, nurturing environment combined with a rigorous, academically challenging curriculum. Now accepting applications for fall 2017, nyma.org. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and No Moo Dairy Free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge and more, harolds.com. And Chesterwood, presenting Out of Sight, an exhibition of outdoor contemporary sculpture that responds to the Chesterwood environs, located in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, open daily, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and until 7 p.m. on Thursdays. Chesterwood.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today with Darren Tracy, and our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go back to the phones. John in Kingston. John, you're on.
Hi there. Hi. We rent a house here in Kingston, and our landlord replaced the front steps for us because they were kind of falling apart. And unfortunately, it feels like the contractor didn't do the job correctly. My question is about the slope of the steps, whether they're supposed to be completely horizontal or if there's supposed to be some degree of slope, and also the depth of the steps, if there's a particular rule about how many inches deep a step should be.
There is a rule regarding both the depth of the step and the rise and the run. I think the rise can exceed like 8 inches, something in that neighborhood. 7 to 8 inches is pretty common. And the run is in the neighborhood of a foot. Again, I don't have my code book here, and I don't have that information memorized because I don't use it every day. But in the neighborhood of a foot horizontally. Okay. And then regarding pitch, I always try to pitch the steps maybe a quarter of an inch or an eighth of an inch, so water tends to drain off.
Oh, very smart.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right, John.
So a quarter to an eighth?
Yeah, that's certainly reasonable. Again, thinking back about reading the code, I don't recall seeing anything about the amount of pitch of the step, but I'm sure you could pitch it 1/8 to 1/4, and that would be reasonable. So and that's away, so like water runs off, not towards the building.
Yeah. It feels like it's more than that, but I'll have to measure it and take a look.
Yeah.
All right, John, thanks a lot for the call. We go over to Gary in Wallington, New Jersey. Gary, you're on.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I actually have about 100 questions for you.
Well, how about one?
So I have a home that's from the 1890s. It's a multifamily home with a storefront. The store has been vacant for the past year and a half about, and we're having trouble renting it out. So I'm deciding to switch it over to a residential apartment, sort of. But my question is, because of almost every home that I see in the surrounding areas, there are steps into the home going up, of course. And my storefront is level with the outside ground. Do you know how I would be able to convert that? Or?
Well, I convert it so you have steps. I don't know that you need steps because it's at grade or slightly above grade. I don't think you need to add steps.
Okay. Okay. All right. I guess that's it then.
All right. Well, that was an easy one. Why don't you ask one more, Gary? You had 100.
All right. I got also some water leakage outside the foundation of my house coming through. Both sides of my house have grass, and, you know, I wanted to know, in terms of digging and sealing up the outside foundation of the house, how would I go about doing that? With what type of materials would I be using to seal the outside of the foundation?
Okay, this call has come up in the past, and typically the easiest solution is to try to pitch the grade away from your house so water's not hanging around there. Often the grade around the foundation will settle. Water comes off your eaves and hangs there like a swimming pool.
Yeah.
And tends to go straight down. So if you can simply add soil so the water hits the soil and flows away from your house, that's a good thing to do. Now, there are other details associated with that. One is you could use like a clay soil, which is much more impermeable than, say, pea stone or sand. So you'd want to use a soil that's impermeable. Also, you could dig down a few inches and install a membrane such as a 6 mil poly and grade that such that the poly lays on the ground and that's pitched away. And then on top of that, you can put whatever soil you want or pea stone, and that would be your impermeable membrane, and that would tend to...
Suggesting digging down and sealing the entire outside of the foundation.
You could do that. You could do that, but that's a lot of work. I would try this approach first and actually look at how severe the problem is. So let me mention this, Gary. I can be reached online or check my website out, my email is darren@westbranchinc.com, and my email or my website is, get it, Darren.
Darren. Write it down before the
West
show.
westbranchengineering.com.
And you may be able to answer a couple of questions
Gary. Yeah, and okay. I can help you out with details. And, and anybody that has questions that we can't answer this short amount of time
nice
that
of
we
you.
Have
it's
here,
very nice
give
of
me
you,
a
sir.
Call. And a lot of people have called, and if I can do it in a short period of time, I'm glad to do that.
Oh, that's nice. Well, I don't know how much free time you have to answer your email, but good for you. Good luck. Kathy in Seward. Kathy, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I'm having my bathroom totally overhauled, and I'm having ceramic tiles put in on the walls and the floor. And I've had, you know, my contractor that is doing the work says one thing, and I've spoken to people who've said other things about what kind of barriers or something like they were calling it cement board for the floors and some sort of membrane on the walls. Do you have any recommendations for how best to, you know, make it nice and flat and waterproof?
I do have some recommendations, particularly for the floor. I have installed ceramic tile floor directly over plywood, a really stiff floor, really stiff plywood floor that doesn't move. And over time, I've had the tiles fail.
Mm.
So because I've seen them fail, I've always installed a cement board or a cement-type board, like Hardy board,
so that's good.
On the floor. And it will help to stiffen up the floor, but it also helped for the tile to bond to the substrate much better than, say, it would bond to wood.
There you go.
What about the walls?
I'm not so certain about the walls, and they're not as important as the floor.
Because I think they're just talking about, you know, because I'm getting new sheetrock on the walls, and they're going to use the sheetrock, and then they're talking about some kind of a membrane.
Right. Is this for a shower area or just a bathroom area?
Well, it's not going to be like a shower with the tile in the shower. I've got a big old clawfoot tub.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a shower curtain hanging in it. So the water won't be shooting right onto the tiles directly.
Okay. If it was a shower, it would definitely need a membrane. Because it's not a shower, I think you would be okay with a moisture-resistant sheetrock, a green board, and I would probably still install a quarter-inch cement baseboard, like a Hardy board.
Okay,
too.
Even on the walls?
Yeah, I would, yeah, okay. If I had the space.
Kathy, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. David in Troy is on. David.
Hello. I have another roof question, very different from the previous caller. I have a wonderful old small barn carriage house built originally in 1875. It was beautifully restored about 1990. And they decided to put a traditional cedar shingle roof on it with breather boards. And I don't know, I'm a canoe owner, so I know that cedar's water resistant, but not totally waterproof. And it worked very fine for years, but in the last few years, it has really deteriorated, curled, split, and it's falling off to the degree that I've had to put a tarp over it. So question one is, I don't know if there were different qualities of cedar shingles. Number two, what might you suggest as a replacement between either a traditional asphalt shingle roof or a metal roof or a vinyl roof? It's a fairly small building. The perimeter is about 18 by 25 feet, so the roof is not huge. But it's leaking.
Okay, okay, David. Absolutely, there are different grades of cedar shingles. Western Red Cedar Select, number one, like a top-quality product and will last a long time, particularly if vented.
Yeah,
as you said,
and this was properly vented, but I think they got the lower-end quality of shingle.
Yeah. How many years has that roof been on?
The roof's been on for since about 1990. But the last couple of years, it's really deteriorated pretty badly and pretty quickly.
That's 27 years. That's not
bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was impressed by, you know, how well it did seem to work. And I know it's a pretty old structure, but, it shed water well, and water rarely got into it. But you could see little pinholes of light through the breather boards. And
yeah. Okay.
It was not an issue, but now it is.
Well, if you have cedar on there...
I'm not inclined to replace it with cedar, but I'm trying to figure out what might be the most economical solution to it.
Okay. If you're talking about economics, then hard to beat an asphalt shingle.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably the most economical way to go. You can go with metal roofing. Corrugated metal roofing that you'd put on, say, a barn is relatively inexpensive, but it may not have the aesthetic that you're looking for.
I'm also guessing it's pretty noisy when it rains.
It is, but some people like that. Some people like
and the small house is close to the small barn. So,
yeah, yeah. And another roofing option that's more aesthetically attractive is a standing seam roof.
A standing seam?
So basically it's a panel type roof. It might be 18 inches, 20, 24 inches in between the panels. And you'll have a seam every 18 or 24 inches, something like that. And many years ago, they used to turn these seams up vertically and hand bend them over. Now they have like a clip system and much more.
What is the advantage of this?
The advantage over a corrugated roof is the aesthetics.
Yeah.
Basically, it looks better to some people.
Okay. Yep. Fair enough.
I'll have to look into that. I appreciate the information. Thank
You're
you
welcome,
very
David.
Much. I always enjoy your shows and the information you provide for people. Thank you.
David, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy joins us today to answer your home improvement and repair questions. Jay in Worcester, Mass. Jay, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, you're on.
Hi. I got an old house here. My question has to do with creating a cathedral ceiling and some insulating issues. The house was built around 1890. It's got a slate roof with cedar underneath. And one of the issues is that the rafters are only about 4 3/4 inches. And I got limited headroom. So I don't want to build out the rafters to be able to put a lot of extra insulation, and I'm pretty sure I'll be able to get a waiver on that from the building inspector. And I have gotten a number of opinions on something, and I'm just trying to figure out which is more correct. The big question that I have is the best way to insulate that space, and whether or not I need to have an airspace in between the insulation and the underside of the roof. And I've gotten several different opinions on this, depending on the kind of insulation that's used. I don't want to use foam. So I'm looking at possibly cellulose. I was told that if I use cellulose packed in there, that I don't need to have an airspace above it. So I'm wondering if that's correct, what your opinion is on that.
Okay, I would suggest you proceed with caution, because when you add insulation, you are reducing the melting effect that happens in the wintertime, and your roof is going to have to carry more weight. And you mentioned that your rafters are relatively shallow, 4.5 inches or 4 3/4 inches, you said. So I would have somebody take a look at that, an engineer. You can call me after or email me after the show, but I might be inclined to increase the size of your rafters. You could feed two birds with one hand by doing so.
God, I have very limited headroom as
yeah,
it is.
I'm going to be
taking down a flat ceiling that's in there now that's in a crawl space where I already have a lot of insulation in there. There's a zonalite vermiculite issue here that I have to have abated under the truss that was set up to do that. And so there's quite a bit of insulation up there now. So the snow does tend to stay on the roof. And as far as I can see, I don't have any leak issues now.
Do you have an attic space? You said you wanted to create a cathedral ceiling, which would imply no attic space.
Well, I'm going to be taking down that crawl space, that flat ceiling, and then converting it to the cathedral ceiling.
Okay. Let me wrap this.
And I just don't have. I'm just not going to have a lot of headroom to really work with to build out those rafters.
Okay. There's quite a bit to talk about on this subject, but let me just say that yes, you definitely need to take ventilation into consideration, and yes, if you're adding fiberglass insulation or any type of insulation up there other than spray foam, you will need to create an air space between the bottom of your roof deck and the top of your insulation. But you might be a good candidate for spray foam insulation since you have limited depth. And
okay.
Again, you can reach me at Darren@WestBranchInc.com or WestBranchEngineering.com discuss that further.
All right, let's go to Carl in Hunter Mountain. Carl, or on Hunter Mountain. You're on, Carl.
Yes, that would be both in or on, I guess.
All right.
By the way, Ray, the kid wanted to become a city planner as opposed to an architect.
That's
he wasn't
right.
scamming. He just upgraded.
Right, you are.
Anyway, here's my question. We own an A-frame, and the basement, while functional, is very humid, obviously, because of the, location below ground. And it's musty. It create, there's that whole scent. So I'm looking at products that are dehumidifiers, and there seems to, and without naming anything, there seems to be a product that seems to act as a full house ventilation system in reverse, whereby it draws the air down and pulls it out. It's 3 or 4 times as much as a regular dehumidifier, but I wondered if you had had any experience with those. Are they worth the extra effort?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the product which you are describing. Is this something you would install in your basement or other part of your home?
Yes, it's installed in the basement, and it actually pulls the air from the top of the house down through and out. It presumably pulls the drier air from the upper portion of the house down into the basement.
To me, that would seem problematic, because when you have warm air and you cool it, it can't hold as much moisture, and the moisture in the air will condense out. So,
interesting. Yeah,
that seems like a problem.
That's, never heard of that.
Is the all of your house humid, or just the basement?
No, just the basement.
Okay. What I would try to isolate the basement. And have you tried just putting a standard dehumidifier in the basement?
We've run through a couple of the old products that we had, you know, the drain the bucket dehumidifiers. But if you isolate it, you say that those dehumidifiers might be more effective.
Yeah, you can isolate your living space. It may be more effective. And what I would do is put a humidistat in the basement. So you have some data to go by. And I would try to keep the humidity in the basement below 60%. Some recommend.
I can tell you that it's pretty consistently about 90%.
Whoa.
Okay, you got to do something there.
Get some cigars in there, boy.
Yeah, and if you could pipe that dehumidifier to a drain, then you don't have to keep emptying it, because that gets old in a hurry. I know I have a dehumidifier in my basement, and it wasn't designed for piping to a drain, but I modified it so it automatically goes to a sump that I have in my house, and it makes a big difference. Just pulling the humidity down 15% makes a big difference.
All right, Carl, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. 800-348-2551, the telephone number, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Lathrop Retirement Communities, communities of older adults devoted to social responsibility and personal and intellectual enrichment, Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, lathrop.kendall.org. Culligan Water of the Northeast, for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work, culligannortheast.com. Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire, featuring Pavestone to help construct outdoor living spaces, walkways, retaining walls, pool decks, edgers, fire pits, and more, whitneysfarm.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. And Studio Herbage, a contemporary floral design studio in historic downtown Johnstown, New York. Local and long-distance delivery, studioherbageflorist.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Darren Tracy is our guest. We talk home repair, maintenance, and improvement and whatnot. And our number is 800-348-2551. The email address is also available, voxpop@wamc.org. And Darren, these came in via email. First, a joke from Lee in Modena. Ray, forgive me, a small joke. So a home inspector is walking around a living room, tapping on a wall here and there. Finally, she stops and says, "This house is in such bad shape, if some creditor put a lien on it, it would fall right over." Ba-dum-bum. And this is a question from Stephen in Pine Bush. Would one of the manufactured wood floating boards work well with radiant heat? And that's from Stephen in Pine Bush.
I can answer that, because we just completed a project where we installed radiant floor heating, and we used an engineered wood product over top. And it's working quite well.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
It's a good product for that. Yeah.
All right, let's go over to Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
Hi, guys. A couple of quick comments and then a feedback.
All right.
To the gentleman who had the very narrow rafters in his roof, I've always traditionally taken every second one or third one and put a piece of steel, 3 by 5 or 4 by 3 and bolted it through that, and that usually satisfies the engineering code for buildings that are the old ones like I have. So pieces of steel put in, not every rafter, but maybe every other one or every third one usually is good for that. The man who called in about the shingles, if you make the distinction between shingles and shakes, it's very important. I had a shingle roof on this house. I just put a standing seam on because my shingles were that. They were cut and not riven like shakes. A man who put the shakes on about the same time, his roof still looks good. And so that's the difference is that the sawn shingles lets the water in the grain, and the shakes is parallel to the grain. And the feedback is that last time I talked to you, I had a problem with Saltillo Mexican floor tiles that have come unfinished, if you remember that conversation.
You remember that?
I do.
Okay.
And it, I was having trouble with them sticking down. There was additive already in the glue, and what the problem was is they needed to be soaked for over an hour before I could put them down. Once I soaked them for an hour and the bubbles stopped coming out, they stuck. They didn't come loose again. So that was it wasn't the lack of additive. It was just the fact that they were so porous that they sucked up the moisture out of the thin set so quickly that they wouldn't bond. So I had to, after I finished them all, I put them in the bucket and watched for bubbles. And when the bubbles stopped bubbling, I took them out, and they weighed like twice as much. And I put them down, let them drain a little bit, and put them down, and then every one of them has stuck perfectly.
Oh, that's good to know. I see. Yes, they must have been quite porous.
Well, they are. They're very light clay. You can break them quite easily. Yeah. That's why you have to use a thin set.
Right.
But what I hated to do was soak them a long time because it had a two coats of a Minwax stain and then three coats of water locks on top to make the finish. There's no finish on it. And I hated to stick that in the water for fear of,
I see.
Mm-hmm. And so by soaking them, though, it didn't seem to bother the finish, and it solved the problem.
That's great.
Okay,
yeah, that's
all.
A good,
that was it.
That's a good point with any masonry project.
Soaking your bricks.
To get your substrate to a saturation point where it's almost 100%, but no standing moisture.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, so that's what you should do.
Mark, thank you so much. 800-348-2551, the number. Darren Tracy is our guest. And Ted in Pittsfield. Ted, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I've got a question that's similar to what you've already answered. I have a small concrete sidewalk that declines from my driveway to the stairs to my front door. Whenever it rains or the snow melts, there's a pool of water in the corner against the house and the stairs, which I worry is going to affect my foundation over time. Is there any way to get the water to drain to the other side of the sidewalk into my front yard instead, short of ripping up the sidewalk and replacing it?
Yes, but you will have to do some removal. You could install a trench drain, which is a linear drain that will catch the water.
Okay.
And you have to have an exit from that drain and pipe that to a lower elevation away from your home. Or you could install, instead of a linear drain, you could install a catch basin, which is around either plastic or concrete vessel that would receive the water, and then that would have a drain coming off of that, and you'd have to pipe it away from the building. So a trench drain or a catch basin.
Okay, trench drain or catch basin.
Correct. Thanks, Ted. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is our number here on Vox Pop. Mike in Pittsfield. Mike, you're on.
Yes. Hi. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I've got a toilet. The tank is not filling. The water it hasn't been a problem until just yesterday. It stopped filling. Now, when I put water into the tank, it seems to drain out. And I checked a little, the plug that the not necessarily the float, but what it's hooked to, that opens up the drain itself
valve.
In the back of the toilet.
Fill valve.
Well, the... It just isn't filling.
Okay. Well, that's an easy fix. Just remove that fill valve and replace it with a new one, and they're relatively inexpensive, and you can get them at your local hardware store or big box store.
Now, wait a minute. The fill valve, are you talking about the water that fills it, right?
It's the...
It comes in. It's not coming
assembly.
In. The water isn't coming in.
It's the mechanism inside the tank called a fill valve, not a shutoff valve down on the piping below the toilet.
No, right.
I'm talking about the apparatus inside the tank.
But you said water's not coming in at all, Mike?
Yeah, water's not coming in at all.
Well, there's
a
valve
like
there.
Very, very a trickle.
Right. There's a valve that's shut off with your float in the tank. So more than likely, there's a problem with that fill valve.
Ah.
Yep. So and they're $15,
$7 to $20,
okay. And you should solve your problem.
And there seems to be a great variation. I've purchased several over the years.
Yeah, that's why I said $7 to $20.
Some of the cheap ones are not the best.
I always go with the more expensive, better quality product. I mean, early in my life, I couldn't afford it. So
right. You
go with the most basic thing.
But even cheap parts, I mean, they say, here's a universal flapper. Not universal by any stretch at all, having purchased like five for one project.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Joe in Bainfield. Joe, you're on.
Yeah, how you doing? It's Greenfield.
Oh, Greenfield. But, says Bainfield here. I didn't know where that was. But, you're on and wherever
Greenfield,
you are.
Greenfield, Massachusetts.
Sure.
All right, I own a Cape and Mass, and I'm trying to sell it, but it needs a new roof. It's got two layers of asphalt shingle on it already. And I was wondering if you had any idea what the code is for putting metal roofing on. Is it okay to leave those two layers on and put the metal roof over it?
I'm not sure about that. I think the code is that you can leave one layer of existing asphalt shingles and go over top, although I don't know that it's recommended by many roofers. Would
I know
recommend
you can do
that
with asphalt.
Right.
But
you want to ask if it's okay to leave those two layers of asphalt and put metal roofing on top?
Yes, I read that somewhere, I believe it was a code, the actual code book for Mass, but it mentioned stand and seam roofing was okay to put over existing roofing. Now, they didn't define how many layers of shingles you could put that over.
Yeah. My intuition and experience would say you could probably do it, and it's not a code issue. Because you're actually minimizing the weight on the roof by having a metal roof. The snow will slide off.
Mm.
Okay.
That's what I heard. It
distributes
the weight.
Would I advise doing that? Maybe not. But, if you're short on money and short on time, you could probably get away with it.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to sell the house and move out, but obviously it'll be a problem for the person moving in.
Yeah.
But, okay. All right. Thank you.
Joe, thanks a lot. In Greenfield. Oh, go ahead.
I'd just like to make a comment on that. I would install a layer of tar paper or otherwise known as felt paper between the existing shingles and the metal roof.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do that, the metal roof will heat up and expand and then contract. Just expand and contract on that granular surface of those existing shingles, and that's not a good idea. So I would install a
all right. Let's go to Jay in Western Mass. Jay, you're on.
I was on earlier, and I got disconnected before I got the answer to my question.
Okay, well, that's why you listen on the radio. But go ahead. We'll answer the second part of your question, which I'm sure he did anyway.
I didn't want to get the feedback by having the radio on at the same time.
Well, we'll talk to the screener about that.
Anyway, I had this slate roof, and I was going to build. I'm planning to build a cathedral ceiling.
Yes.
And insulation questions and airspace.
Right.
Above
that's
the insulation.
Very important.
I'm very reluctant to use foam.
All right.
I would be reluctant too, but it may be a good option in that you don't want to increase the thicknesses of your rafters.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm here. So under no circumstances would you put any kind of insulation up without leaving an airspace.
That's correct. I understand that you may have less of a problem with cellulose than other products, but still, under no circumstance would I ever do that. Ever advise doing that?
But foam would be okay without
spray foam is okay because if it's a good job because there's no room for the moisture to condense out, and you know that's the theory behind spray foam is that you.
Do you think the foam that we have that we are using now? I know it's not the urea formaldehyde foam from the 70s that caused a lot of problems, but do you think the foam technology that we're using now has been sufficiently tested for toxicity issues that you don't think we're going to see any problems with that in the future?
I don't know, but my guess would be that it's okay.
All right, Jay, I'm going to hang up the phone now, just so you know. And if you need any more, you can always listen online at WAMC.org. You'll hear the whole program, and you can listen back to anything you may have missed. Let's go over to Pete in Del Mar. Pete, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
A little while ago, you guys took a call on roofing, and somebody had questions about the kinds of roofing to put on, and you touched upon cedar. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could elaborate on the pros and cons of cedar tiles. I know you mentioned that quality does make a difference. I have a little addition on my house, and I'm playing around with the idea of cedar, or I'll probably go with metal. But an old friend of mine turned me off the cedar right off. He says, no, that's not the kind of thing you want. And I was wondering what you had to say about it.
Was this for siding or roofing? I'm sorry.
Roofing.
Yeah. Well, they're not inexpensive. I do like the idea of a natural product. You have to install them properly with ventilation to get the maximum longevity out of the product.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be up to you. In terms of that choice, it will
last a long time.
Well, the previous caller had his on for 27 years.
Yeah, there you go.
That's
but
an
do
example.
It right, basically.
Yeah, I mean they will wear out. They're a natural product, and even though they're rot resistant,
treat them periodically.
Treat them?
I don't see where that would be a problem. I mean, it's work to do that.
Treat them with what?
Yeah, water repellent.
Okay, yeah. Right on the roof.
Yeah, why not?
Huh, well, that's interesting. Hey, Pete, thanks. We got to move it along here. We're almost done. Phil in Rotterdam. Phil.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Very quick question. I've recently moved into a new house. It has a gas cooker. I want to replace it with the electric cooker we brought with us. There is a 35-amp breaker in the box. And there's some old cable which I want to replace, but I'm having conflicting views on what the cable size should be, anything from 6'4 to 10'4. And I'm just wondering what size cable should I be looking for to replace that particular run.
Okay, it's a function of the breaker. You have to have your conductor paired with your breaker and also the draw of the machine. So what you do not want to do is have a breaker that's larger than the current that the wire should be carrying. Because that way, if you do that, the wire can melt. So that's a safety
issue. Isn't it always safer just to go for bigger gauge wire, even if you don't need it?
It is safer, but that's
more expensive.
You may be spending more money when you don't have to.
So there is a 35-amp 240.
Yeah, I can't tell you off the top of my head if that's good for a 6 or an 8. I can tell you that a 15-amp breaker, you can use a 14-gauge wire, and a 20-amp breaker, 12-gauge wire. But off the top of my head, without looking, I can't remember if 35 is good for a 6
wire. What's
a
good resource for that?
The NEC, National Electric Code.
NEC. All right, yeah. Phil, thank you, and good luck with that one. We only have about a minute here, so let's go on over to Rebecca in Lenox. Rebecca, you only have about 30 seconds to pose the question. Oh. Darren has about 30 to answer.
I have windows I want to recycle that are 36 inches wide. How much I want to put them into a sun house? How much support do I need on a wall? What would be the length of one wall of the sun house to put that 36-inch window in?
Okay.
I'm not following you exactly. I think you're asking how deep your header should be. It depends on the length of your rafters, but maybe 2x8 for a header, just off the top of my head. You may want to contact me at.
That's a good point. Yeah. And Rebecca, we kind of have a bad signal on you anyway, so we'll leave it there. What is your contact information, Darren Tracy?
Okay, I was stumbling over this earlier.
Oh, you wrote it down.
Like,
good for you.
At least a half a dozen emails.
Okay.
But best to reach me at Darren@WestBranchInc.com, and I also have a website. Have several websites, but WestBranchEngineering.com would be a good website to contact me at also.
Hey, man, thanks a lot for coming. We appreciate it. Support comes from Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, for 14 years, offering plant spirit medicine and engineering, energy clearing, I should say, for health, body, mind, and spirit. CLAREPearson.net. Rhinebeck Artist Chops, professional picture framing and fine art materials. Rhinebeck New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston, rhinebeckart.com. Albany Parking Authority, offering more than 5,000 public parking spots in Albany, parkalbany.com for on-street and garage options. And Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972, pelhamauto.com. Thanks to Darren Tracy for stopping by today. Thank you for listening and for the great questions. I apologize if we did not get to your calls today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered today by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is I'm Ray Graff. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. And then there's me. I'm Ray Graff. I'm the host of the show. Tomorrow, well, mercy sakes alive, they haven't been on in a while. David Tripp and Bob Scott return to answer your coin and stamp collecting questions. Right now, though, stand by for news. We'll be right back.